Welcome to the Recovering from Religion podcast. We are a vibrant international community for those who have questions or doubts about their faith. I am your host, Tim Reimel, along with my co-host, Bill Prickett. Hi, Mr. Bill.
Tim, how's it going?
Hey, does anybody ever say Mr. Bill to you?
Yes. When it was originally on in the, I think it was 70s or 80s on Saturday Night Live, yes, people would call me Mr. Bill. And I actually have a Mr. Bill doll in my office on my desk. So yes, I have heard that and have people who still to this day call me that. And there's always going to be somebody who will do the voice. Oh, no. So yes, it's a part of my life.
Do they call you Reverend Bill?
I haven't had anybody call me that in a long time. There are a few people who were part of my church years ago who still call me Brother Bill, because that's what, you know, in a Southern church, that's what you call your pastor. And so I still have people who call me that, yes.
Mm. Yeah, we had that too.
I have lots of names, and some of them I can't even say on air.
Oh, I've called you something I can't say on air.
I know you can. I know you have.
Well, Mr. Reverend Bill, this is our one-year anniversary episode.
I know. Can you believe that?
It's gone by really fast.
It really has. I don't even know if I told this on air or not. I may have in our first episode. Who remembers? It's been a year. But when you contacted me and asked me to do this, you and I had just done a radio interview, a national radio interview together, talking about our past in conversion therapy. And you emailed me and said, would you like to do a podcast? And I agreed, thinking you wanted me to be a guest on a podcast. So I said yes, thinking I was going to be a guest.
Yeah, and as I recall, you were saying, now what's a podcast again?
I did. I had never heard a podcast at the time. I mean, I knew what they were, but I had never listened to one. So as soon as you said it, I said, oh, sure. And then when I found out it wasn't just being a guest on a podcast, it was actually doing a podcast, then I started doing research and listening to them. And now I'm kind of hooked on several podcasts.
Oh, right. Same here. I didn't really listen to podcasts, and now I've got several on my phone as well. And
oh, yeah.
Listen between books.
I downloaded one today because we leave on vacation in a week, and I downloaded one today onto my tablet that I plan to listen to while we're on vacation.
Yeah, it's they're addicting.
They really are.
Well, a lot has changed in the last year, and
yes.
I started a new job and left the field of self-employment for being employed on a I'm working for the man.
To the real world. That's right. The man.
Yeah, working for the man. And you've got a book that's come out. And I actually want to talk about that book because that came out on October what date? First?
It came out on October 4th.
October 4th. Okay. Yes. So before we go any further, I want to talk about this book because it's called The Double-Minded Man. And I read it before it got published.
Yes.
And I had to contact you about a couple of things. One was that hot sex scene where I...
Come on.
I actually put it on audio. So I'm walking down the street, walking my dog, and then I had to get a cigarette.
So, you told me that. I asked you to read the book because the book does deal with a young man who gets involved in conversion therapy. It's fiction, but it's kind of based on some of my experience. And because you had a similar past, I wanted you to read it because I respect your opinion. And so I asked you to read it. Then you wrote to me and told me you thought there is a sex scene in there. You thought it was very hot. And I just was not, that was not my plan at all. And I was just baffled by the response to it. So, but then later on, I had a woman who had agreed to read it, to write a review, and she wrote me and she called it pornographic. So I guess I'm just jaded and I didn't see it that way. No,
look, Bill, you just have sexuality oozing out of you.
Oh, that's it.
And you can't stop it from getting on the page.
Yeah.
But it was tasteful. And what I really liked about your book, as we talked about later, was the fact that you really nailed what it feels like to have the struggle between faith and real life. And of course, this deals specifically with conversion therapy. So there were a lot of things that were somewhat triggering and a lot of emotion, I think, that came up for me. But it doesn't, even if you don't come from a conversion therapy background, you can certainly feel what it's like to have that struggle.
Yeah. And that was the goal. I've had people for years tell me to, you know, I should write an autobiography, but I was not interested in that. But I thought I could tell some of my story through the eyes of a fictional character. I created a fictional character named Nate. I placed him in my hometown in the early 1980s, which is when I got involved in it. And so he lives in a world that I once inhabited. I wanted it to be about the struggle between what's going on inside him and what he's being told. And so it's, you don't have to have a church background, a religious background. You don't have to be from the South. It's more about when the things that you've always believed begin to unravel. And so I think people who listen to this podcast know what that's like. So it's not specifically for an audience of people who've been through conversion therapy, but it's for people who've had those doubts of, well, this is what I've always been told, but it's not working.
And the book is called A Double-Minded Man.
Yes. Uh-huh.
It's
available at most bookstores, all online booksellers. You can go to my website, BillPrickett.com, and find locations. If you particularly want an autographed copy, you can find those. There's a form on my website for you to order those. But Amazon.com has it, and it's doing well. I'm very honored and thrilled. I was asked to speak on October the 11th for National Coming Out Day. I was invited to speak at an event and read an excerpt and take questions. And so it's doing really well. There's some just amazing reviews on Amazon, and I'm very humbled by that.
You and I were talking, and you told me about a letter that you had received, and so I asked if I could read it. I just want to share this with our audience. And this is from a woman who wrote to you after reading your book.
Yes, she read my book and wrote to me. And I have to tell you, I read the letter and I was blown away. And I told my husband, I said, I want to read this to you. And I made it about a paragraph and just started crying. I mean, the courage and bravery of this woman, I was just so touched by her letter.
Well, let me read it. It says, I felt the need to share with you why I think your book is so important. While my son Samuel was not forced to go to an anti-gay program, because I'm one of those parents who quite literally never thought one way or another about whether any of them were gay, I just always figured the safe sex lecture was the same either way, so whatever. So when my son came out when he was 14, I was neither surprised nor unsurprised. It just was. So the sweet thing had absolute support from me and many of my friends. We had already made the move to the Episcopal Church several years prior, so we had support there too. But prior to our change in denominations, we were Mormons. And even though Sam had not come out then, he, of course, heard all of the words spoken against, quote, people like him his entire life. We live in a predominantly LDS area, and whether it's legal or fair, which it isn't, school policy, local politics, and business, teens' social life, it's all based upon the us versus them idea. By then, because of our defection, we were already a them. So kids he had gone to school with since kindergarten literally stopped speaking to him overnight. He lost all but one friend. He was beat up at school and forced off the track team, harassed and ridiculed. His stepfather also started treating him differently, and none of that got better. The thing is, my boy is dead now. He died by suicide 11 months ago. I believe that no matter who he was accepted and loved by, and there were and are so many people who love him, he could never quiet those voices in his head, ever. How can a lifetime of shame be forgotten? There were other issues involved, but I do feel a lot of people in this town and in the LDS church cause irreparable damage, and they just don't get it. Your book is amazing. These are the things we need to be talking about and working so hard to stop. I am breathless when I think of all the lives impacted negatively by churches who continue to preach against and actively try to, quote, fix something that cannot nor should be fixed. It's like suicide. I read somewhere for every person that commits suicide, six people are directly affected. And I think that's a very conservative estimate because of the people whose lives have been changed by Sam's death number in the hundreds. Know that this is good work you are doing now. I know there must be times where you feel discouraged and afraid and worried about how people will react to your words. So when those times come, remember that this mom in Idaho is always going to be here to encourage you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. That is an absolutely beautiful letter.
It is, and it's so gut-wrenching. At first, that she could reach out to me in her pain. I can't even imagine what she has gone through, and it breaks my heart that there are kids out there like her son, Sam. Mm-hmm. And what the church has done to these kids, the message of condemnation and shame and guilt, it just does, even though he had a family that loved him and supported him, those messages are so harmful and cause such damage that some of us never get over. Yeah. And I think that's, you know, what we see in the work that we've done here in this last year, that the harm that these extreme religious beliefs can cause people.
You and I were talking before we started recording, and you were going to ask the question, what did you learn this year that surprised you?
I think the main thing that I've learned, I've been amazed at how transparent and resilient people can be. We have heard people tell about horrible shit that's happened to them and has been done to them. And yet they come on this show and they tell their story. They're still standing. They may be standing a little shakier. Things may not make sense, but they're still standing and they're telling their stories. It's just been phenomenal to me to listen to the stories. And beyond that, I think the other thing I learned is doing a podcast is hard work. I've been on podcasts and I've been guests, and I know some podcasters do it every week. We try in a perfect world to do it every other week. I cannot imagine doing it weekly. It's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. Yeah, I was going to answer that same question by saying that I don't think I realized how deep the damage goes with a fundamentalist religion or religions that try to control you. And you and I both came out of conversion therapy. But even talking about conversion therapy, for me, it was an extension of my fundamentalist background. And I am trying to unravel things that I didn't know were an issue. You know, for me, it was being in an environment that used psychological terms or use pop psychology to say, well, here's why you're broken and here's what you need to do to be fixed. And now all these years later, these issues are pervasive. And when I hear those terms, I'm triggered. When I hear those terms, I think, well, that doesn't work, because those terms, which may be accurate, were not used in that context. They weren't used in the context of healing. They were used in the context of shame and control.
Yes. Yeah. And I saw that getting back to the book again. Sorry, because it's all about me. When I was writing the book, some of what I wrote triggered me. And there would be times, as dramatic as it sounds, I would be writing and crying at the same time as I lived it through my main character, Nate. And as an author, I detach myself from what's going on as much as possible. And so I see him making these decisions and I hear him saying these words and believing this, and I would just cry because I believed those things. I said those things. I caused that harm for other people. And so listening to people in this past year has caused me to go back through a lot of that stuff that I thought was, you know, I think you're probably this way too. Don't you think at some point we believe we're past it, and then all of a sudden we realize, oh God, it's still there?
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
And I don't know if we'll ever get beyond it or healed completely of it, but it's so powerful and so destructive.
Well, that's why my husband says he thinks I'm part of an evangelical sleeper cell, and one day I'm just going to wake up and go back. because things come out of my mouth that he's like, where the hell did that come from?
Yeah. And I'm like you, some stuff just triggers me. I'll read things on Facebook and somebody will make the most innocuous statement and something inside me rises up and I want to just lash out at it.
Well, you know what I loved about the book and the messages that I think we've received over and over again this last year is tell your story. Just tell your story. It's so healing to go out and to write your story down, to share that experience or experiences with other people. I've seen that with my own friends who I've had a chance to talk to over the last year, and they're in this limbo place of, do I stay in the church? Do I go? What does it mean if I leave? And just having those shared experiences really does make a difference. Even if they're not at the place right now, it still plants a seed in their mind that it's okay to think, it's okay to process, it's okay to have those feelings. But you know, you're not alone. There's a lot of other people that are in the same place. So share your story.
Yeah. And we've seen, as people have shared with us from so many different backgrounds, they start out having these questions or asking these questions or having these doubts and kind of somewhere thinking, I'm the only one that feels this way. And you and I felt that when we were in conversion therapy and realized it's not working. And we think it has to just be me. Years before that, when I realized I was attracted to other boys, I thought, I'm the only one. And so we've listened to people this year talk about their story and say over and over, I thought I was the only one. I thought there was something wrong with me. And so beginning to speak those out loud, finding other people online or in groups close to you, going, talking to somebody, there is a catharsis in verbalizing it.
So I also want to mention, you know, I know part of the reason that we came to Recovering from Religion in the first place is because we do a lot of things behind the scenes, or we're doing a lot of things before we ever got here. You and I are both authors. You and I have both, we speak out a number of documentaries and shows that we go on to talk about conversion therapy or telling our own stories. So I wanted to bring that up, as well as talk about the fact that being a part of Recovering from Religion has meant a lot to both of us. I think being able to kind of expand what we do, as well as attach ourselves to things like the Secular Therapy Project, the online chat supports and hotlines. I was actually just on a call on Sunday with the team, and it is exciting to sit into this, you know, virtual room of people who are really passionate about helping people walk through this process. And one of the things I like about Recovering from Religion is that it's not dogmatic. There are a lot of atheist groups out there that are very dogmatic. If you don't drop everything that you believe and suddenly say you're a non-believer and God doesn't exist, then you don't really fit into a part of that group. And our show has been something a little different because you're a person of faith and I am not. And so we've been able to talk about those in a way that is non-threatening. We're able to have our personal points of view. And I think there are a lot of people out there who aren't ready to take that label of atheist, but don't necessarily believe it the way they used to. So I appreciate the fact that we have this platform to say, look, this is a journey. This is a process. And you don't have to be one way or the other. Is just a matter of being able to process and think rationally and come to your own conclusions.
Yeah, it's not about knowing answers. And a lot of the comments that we've gotten this past year are people who have noticed that you and I are we came from similar backgrounds, but we ended up in very different places right now. And as we talk to people, it's not about, it has to be this way. It has to be my way. You have to believe this. And I think that's very healthy. And we've gotten so many positive comments from people who appreciate that we have different perspectives, but we're able to respect whoever we're talking with and wherever they are on the journey of faith or deconstruction. It's okay to be where you are. We've talk to people who, as you mentioned, they're complete atheists. They, in their minds, they do not believe that God exists. Then we've talked to people who don't really know, and it's okay not to.
And that brings us to some of our shows. So our very first show was with Yvette Cantu-Schneider, who we both know and go way back with. She was part of Conversion Therapy. She was executive director of the women's ministry at Exodus International. She worked for Family Research Council as a policy analyst, was traveling around the country and speaking. And she is a brilliant speaker.
Oh, yeah. Brilliant. And brilliant writer. I read her book.
Yes.
And I liked that we were able to, she kind of crossed us over because in her past life, she was involved in fundamentalism as it crossed over into the political realm. And it was very interesting seeing that connection that we're living in right now in our American culture.
I have to say, so her husband stays with us because he works in Sacramento and they live in Nevada. Mm-hmm. So we get to see him usually, anywhere from one night to three nights a week. And I adore this couple. He's so funny and as intelligent and articulate, well, almost, as she is. So Yvette and her husband, I'm not going to say his name because he has because of his position here, but they're just amazing people. So that was such a privilege to be able to talk to her and to be able to call them friends. So if you haven't heard that episode, I think it was our very first episode.
It was one of our first because we also around the same time interviewed another close friend of ours, John Smith. And when the movie Boy Erased came out, we brought John on to talk about that because he is depicted in the movie. He was a part of Love in Action, the ex-gay ministry that is shown in the movie, as you were a part of it. And so he is depicted in the movie. His name has been changed, but one of the characters is supposedly loosely based on him. And so we brought him on to talk about his past and his background and how he handles the harm and the damage that he knows he did, but that is shown in the movie so vividly and overly dramatic in places. But I thought that was a powerful episode as well.
What would you say was your favorite?
Favorite? That's kind of like asking what my favorite child is, I think. There's been some that have, I loved the episode we did with Micah Murray. He was involved in the Bill Gothard's Institute in Basic Youth Conflicts, and I was very involved in that in my past. And so he and I had a connection that I thought was interesting for me, asking him questions. And I remember when we were doing the interview, I kept telling myself to rein it in because I wanted to just monopolize all of the questions in the conversation because so much of what he said was my past and my experience. And it's also there's a one scene in there, one section where he said something and I was laughing so hard. I literally had to mute my mic and let you take over because I couldn't even talk. I was laughing so hard. And that's never happened to me. When I did radio years ago, I just didn't, that's not professional, but I absolutely just lost it. In the same way that we were doing an interview with Sarah and Becca, talking about their marriage and the changes because they were married and then Sarah transitioned and they, their story of love and support. I the opposite. I started crying and had to mute myself. So I've been through the range of emotions as we've done these episodes.
Yeah, you have.
I'm an emotional wimp.
There's nothing wrong with being emotional.
You're an automaton.
I am, yeah. That's why they call me Sheldon at home. No, we've had, I would encourage people to go back and listen to some of those shows because, again, I've learned so much about Jehovah's Witnesses, about Scientology.
Mormons.
It's just a lot of interest.
We did an interview with a Hare Krishna, former Hare Krishna priest. Right. And I think you're asking about favorites. When we did The Power of Cults, I thought that was such a powerful episode. And I came away from that rethinking so much of my past. and just understanding, you know, why when I was in conversion therapy, I couldn't just walk away immediately, why I thought the way I thought and acted the way I did. She, Dr. Leila
Janya.
Yeah. Just, I mean, as she talked, it was like a light bulb went on. I went, oh my God, now I understand. And I have talked about that on several occasions since then to people as we talk about, well, how could you stay in that? She helped me to understand.
Yeah, that was the bounded choice thing.
Yes, that concept just cleared things up for me. I honestly understood, because you think, people say, well, you had a choice. Well, you do, but you get so bounded in the cult itself that it does take away some of your free will and some of your ability to choose. You're not really making choices. And so it's powerful. I encourage people to listen to that episode.
Yes, I think that was that whole bounded choice, I think is what she called it.
Yeah.
Because again, we've had a lot of conversations around here. As my husband would always say, you're so analytical. How could you not just go, oh, well, this is ridiculous, and walk away? But when you grow up in it, that's where you come from. You can't think outside of that box.
Yeah, it really is. It becomes. I told somebody in a workshop recently where I was speaking. I said fundamentalism is the personification of cognitive dissonance. We are locked inside this bubble, and we're not making choices based on outside input or stimulus. It's all what's inside that little bubble that we have. And so that bubble becomes both an isolation chamber and an echo chamber for us.
Yes. Yes, yes. Well said. Debbie Glander on Recovering from Religious Abuse. I think that was our highest rated show.
That's the most listened to show that we've done. It still stays as the power of cults and the religious abuse are the two that are their most listened to consistently.
And that's fascinating to me, because I think a lot of us, right, when we're coming out of our religious backgrounds, we don't think of it as abuse. We just think, here we are, we're with like-minded people, we all believe the same thing. And it's not until you step back a little bit and you think, well, who is this God that loves me so much he'll send me to hell if I don't love him back?
Yes. Yeah.
Right?
And the fear they use to control us, that's abuse. The shame, the guilt, that's abuse. And so that was a really good episode where we had the two women telling their story and helped to understand how it wasn't just what we believed. It was actually religious abuse.
But again, we just didn't see it that way.
No. If you'd have told me at the time when I was involved in fundamentalism, do you realize that you're being abused? No, I'm happy. God loves me. I'm going to heaven. It was beyond my concept of thinking.
Yeah, same here. Since we're going to take a break, I do want to talk about how do we deal with family members during the holidays, because I heard on the call with the RFR team is that this is the season where people start to call and contact RFR because of the loneliness, because of the conflict of families. So what do you do?
You know, the holidays are hard on people. They create such a sense of expectation. We're supposed to be happy, we're supposed to be joyous, or we're supposed to be thankful. And so we have all of these expectations placed on us. And again, like when we were in fundamentalism, we look inside and go, it really doesn't feel that way, or it's not working, or I'm not happy, or I'm not thankful. And we think there's something wrong with us.
I think the conflict really has to do with community, is that we want to fit into our community, we want to belong. And when we don't, we feel shame.
Yes.
And then we are not able to connect. And especially if we start to feel like our beliefs are changing and we really are facing something alone. Yeah. So it's difficult then to have those conversations. So I know in my family, I don't know if I've shared this story or not, but my mom had lymphoma a couple of years ago. And she had something that happened at home, and she ended up in the hospital. And so I'm standing there talking to her, And then her pastor showed up, and my mom became a different person in that it became a very spiritual, religious experience. And I stood off to the side listening to how she was talking to her pastor. And she was describing how she called out to God and that God had saved her and delivered her. So, you know, it's the amens and all that kind of stuff. And I was thinking, well, why didn't God let that happen in the first place?
You're asking those questions again.
I'm asking those questions, right? But there's a religious tone around that mm-hmm. conversation. And there's a religious tone when she is in an environment that encourages such religious tone. I'm not in that place. My sister is not in that place. So when we go home or at their house, then it feels more natural. She doesn't talk like that around mm-hmm. us.
Right.
But all that to say, when you're growing up in that environment or you've come from that environment and now you're here for the holidays and you're forced around family members that you're not normally around or at least around for shorter periods of time, it gets overwhelming.
Yes.
And you feel like you're hiding something. I mean, I've made the correlation between coming out as gay to coming out of the church because now people start to see you differently. And if you say, I don't believe this anymore, or God forbid, I'm an atheist, mm-hmm. you might as well come out as gay because it's the same thing. I mean, you're still disenfranchised from your community and your family.
And they see, and they can see you, or you feel like they will see you differently. And right. you know, because you've changed, you've let go of stuff. And I have all of my family at one time were members of my church. I was their pastor as well as their son or brother or whatever. So it sometimes difficult. And so we just don't have those discussions at home. And there are times that I'll bite my tongue because somebody will say something or some casual comment and I want to speak up. But I know for the sake of harmony, I don't do it.
And I think my advice to people during this holidays, especially if that's your situation where you're in a religious home, is you have a couple of options. One is just don't talk. And the second one is to build a different community. And I know that's really hard, especially if you're in the Midwest or you're somewhere where you don't really have that kind of support. But again, I'm going to refer back to the RFR page, Recovering from Religion, where we do have support groups online. You can chat with somebody. You can make a phone call. You can talk to somebody. There's also meetup groups out there where you can log on and see if there's a meeting in your area that's in Recovering from Religion. There are options that don't make it quite as lonely. I haven't found a lot of success in Facebook groups for finding those types of things, but they're out there.
They are.
And there are communities out there that are available to help. So that's my recommendation is don't be lonely. Make a phone call.
Yeah, the holidays are hard. And many of us, I mean, I have a wonderful relationship with my family, but I know there's just parts of my life and where I am and what I believe that we don't talk about. We just don't.
Yeah.
And so it's still a working, loving relationship. But I know some people don't have that. And if you don't, then there are choices you can make. You can seek support. You can seek a community outside. And sometimes the hard choice is don't put yourself in that situation. If it's so toxic, it's going to be detrimental to you. Sometimes you just have to say, that's not healthy for me.
But here's the thing about that, right? Is it goes back to that bounded choice is that I have a friend who's in a situation I won't go into, but she's dealing with another family member of a related individual. So they're not... It's a grandkid is what I'm trying to say. And they don't get along with the other family. And the problem is they can watch all of the manipulation that happens and they can see the family dynamics. They're not a part of it and they've withdrawn from it. But when you've grown up in a family that is that manipulative and judgmental and you don't know any different, it's really hard not to get sucked into the drama.
Oh, yes.
And it's really hard to even see the drama and make the choices to get out of the drama. Mm-hmm. So I just want to call out that I know it's easier to say, well, just don't go there or walk away. But when you're in it and that's all you've known and don't see it, then it makes it much more difficult.
Right.
If you are able to get out of the drama, then just get out of the drama.
Right.
But if
right.
not, you know, there are other places you can go. And, you know, it's like I tell my own kids, you know what, you're your own person. Just because somebody manipulates you doesn't mean you have to do it. And, you know, you can walk away from the relationship, the consequences, the conversation. So there are other options to not have to deal with it.
Yeah, it's just like when we begin to re-examine our faith, we ask these hard questions, we begin to take it apart, to put it back together. The same is true of relationship dynamics in our life. If there are things, we've always done this, but it's not working for us, or it's painful for us, or it's harming us, then we need to start evaluating, examining it, taking it apart, see how it goes back together, or if it even will go back together.
Right. What's going on for the next couple of months with you?
Well, we're leaving on vacation this next week, and going to be just after the release of the book. There was a lot of flurry of activity, as there usually are. I did some speaking and did several interviews, podcasts, and it was exhausting. So, I think I've shared in the past, I'm back, I have cancer and I'm doing cancer treatments again. So it's kind of draining to my energy level. And so I have to really monitor that during these times of holidays and stress. So we're going to do the holidays and kind of do laid back, but just enjoying kind of a lull in all the activity that went on when the book was released.
Good.
Yeah.
Great. Good for you.
How about you?
Taking a break.
How about you?
So, as I mentioned, I did start a new job. Not working for the man, or I'm working for the man now.
You are working for the man.
So, I'm still working at home because that was a prerequisite. I wouldn't take a job that made me leave.
You have to get out there with all those people.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm a terrible person to drive with, especially in the morning. So I'm still working at home, but it was still you know, a lot of hours. And that's kind of been dealing. You and I talked about mm-hmm. the podcast. And yeah. So this is a good time to say that we're going to take a little break.
Yeah.
And we're going to do that as we regroup and figure out what we can do better, figure out what were some of the things that didn't go so well this last year that we want to fix.
Yeah.
And so we actually are going to go on our 10-year anniversary trip to Cancun.
Oh, nice.
So that'll be a lot of fun.
And you say, when you say we, it's not talking about me and you, it's you and your husband.
Oh, Bill, I wish it was me and you, but no, it's my husband.
We would have so much fun.
We would have
a
lot of fun.
We always do when we're together.
Yeah, we do. But anyway, I'm not taking you.
Okay.
I'm taking
my husband. I'm not taking you on my cruise next week either.
I don't want to go.
But yeah, you and I are taking a break, not from each other, but from the podcast. So for the next couple of months, we're going to be regrouping, re-examining, looking at it, and what does the future hold for this and for us?
I do want to say that a couple of things. As I mentioned, that you know, Bill and I have had a platform, and we've written a number of books together. Well, not together, separately.
We need to do one together.
We should do, but you write fiction, and that's just, again, books of lies. I can't do that. I am a member of the American Psychological Association. If anyone found out that I wrote something that wasn't true,
yes,
I would be kicked out.
But it would qualify you for a position with this administration.
Oh,
hey,
boy.
It's the end of the year. I can say it. I encourage people to look at you at timreimel.com, your books. I'm not trying to just flatter, because I've always said it, and I've said it on this show. I think you're one of the most brilliant people I know. And I encourage people to get your book. Going Gay was just so powerful to me. And I know people on my Facebook page got tired of, because I was just quoting you for days as I was reading that book. I was pulling quotes from your book and popping it on Facebook. And I just think it's amazing. And then your last one, Rethinking Everything, for anybody who's going through questions and doubts, read that book.
Thank you. That book was really a culmination after the Going Gay book was out, and I started having conversations with people. And then, when I wrote Going Gay, I wasn't really sure where I was at that point. I didn't know what I believed or how it fit together. And the following years of going gay and conversations with parents and pastors and people that had come out. And then for me, it was just more research, just deep diving into the archaeological and psychological and biological and neurological research about what makes us human and how, where did this whole idea of religion come from in the first place. So there's a lot of information in that book, and it took a long time to write. It was emotionally draining. It was emotionally invigorating. I tried to hit the aspects of, you know, when we deal with depression and we deal with anger and we face confusion and we don't know if we're agnostic or atheist or where exactly we fall. So I really tried to address all of that in the book. And then there's five different appendices at the end of that that goes more into depth into the science behind our Christianity, where it came from, and how it developed to what it becomes. So it is for people who are just questioning and want to know, do I stay? Do I go? What does this mean? How do I, you know, what are the facts?
Yeah.
So we're not big on facts currently in our administration, but...
But and it is an excellent book, and I appreciated before it was published that you had me read sections of it and offer comments, and that was an honor for me, and I think it's important for people to read if they're asking these questions, having these doubts, because it's important to quote your book to rethink everything.
It is important to rethink everything.
It is. I mean, there's nothing that can't be rethought. If you think it and it still holds true, that's fine. But don't hold on to something just because you've always been told to hold.
Yes. Yep. Question everything, rethink everything, be rational, and whatever is true will stand.
And Tim and I are both available if people are interested in having us as a guest or getting our opinions or feedback on something. We were doing that before the podcast became a reality, and we're still open to doing that. We can be contacted on either of our websites, timreimel.com or billprickett.com. And if you want to contact us at the podcast, if you have comments or questions, or as we take this break and rethink and retool or relook at things, if you have a comment or a suggestion or just a thought, you can contact us at podcast@recoveringfromreligion.org.
I also want to encourage you again, and since this is really who we work for, is Recovering from Religion, go to the Recovering from Religion website. So it's recoveringfromreligion.org. And if you'd like to make a donation, we will gladly accept those donations. This is a 100% volunteer organization. Nobody gets paid. All of the money that's received goes to projects and programs and helping other people figure out what's true for them, how to deconstruct, and how to walk through the issues that are raised whenever you're going through such a difficult process. And again, I want to remind people that we do have things like the Secular Therapy Project. Yes. So if there is a therapist in your area, we can connect you with that therapist where it is evidence-based research, evidence-based therapy. You don't have to worry about being persuaded one way or the other. You can talk openly and freely about your faith or religion, where you've come from, the issues or problems that you're dealing with, and you're not going to be persuaded to go one way or the other. It's just helping you sort out the issues. Again, we have the online chat support. We've got the hotline. If you feel overwhelmed during the holidays or at any point for that matter, please call us on the hotline or get on the website, look for chat support, and you can talk to somebody there and get the support you need. We don't want you to be alone.
Yes.
During this time. And then the local support groups, as I mentioned, there are several. I think we have over 200 support groups, and they're continuing to grow. The really cool thing is that this is growing around the world. So we have other support groups and things happening in other countries that are popping up. You can look up meetup.com and type in Recovering from Religion or any words that you think might be relevant to where you are. And if there's a group available, then that will come up on meetup.com, and you can go to a local group as well. If you're interested in starting a group, contact the organization and they can get you going on how to be a group leader. Mm-hmm. And then we also have a blog. So I don't think we've talked a lot about the blog, but if you would like to read other people's stories, if you have a story that you want to share, go to the blog and check it out and send us a letter and say, hey, I want to write for this. We've got some great support. So even if you're not a writer, there are people that can help you put together your story. And we would encourage you to get involved in that aspect of the organization.
Yes. And I just want to thank Recovering from Religion for letting us do this in this past year. And I appreciate you asking me to be involved. It's been a wonderful, wonderful experience.
Agreed. It's been a wonderful experience for me. And I've loved getting to know you even better through this process. And your stories, Bill, are epic.
Thank you.
People say they want to be your friend because you're sweet, you're sexy, sexy Southern draw.
You did tell me somebody told you that they just want to be my friend. They hear me on the podcast. I want to be his friend. Well,
yeah, such a nice guy.
I'm glad to be a part of this. It is beyond anything I could have expected, and it's been a joy this year. I mean, I love you dearly as a friend already, but it's been wonderful being a part of this.
Yeah, same here. Shout out to Dale Ray, who's our founder.
Yes.
Gail, who's our executive director. So two amazing, sweet, wonderful people.
And so supportive of what we've been doing.
Supportive.
Yeah, they brought us on, gave us free rein, and just have let us do it. I mean, when we first started talking about it, Gail actually called me at home. And she had been on my website and read my stuff. And she said, why do you want to do this? Because as a person of faith, she said, do you see any conflicts between your faith and some of the people who have abandoned faith? And I said, absolutely not. If Recovering from Religion was all about talking people out of their faith, I wouldn't have done it. But it's about helping people who've been harmed by religion. It's about helping people process what they've been told to believe. I'm on board. I've been doing that for 30 years. So this was a perfect outlet, and I appreciate, I love Gail so much anyway. So.
Kind, sweet.
Yes.
And I think that represents the organization, right? It's usually from the top down. So when you have those kinds of people who are at the top of the organization, it just goes all the way through. And I see that in the volunteers and the board. Just an amazing group of people that really love people and love what they do, and they're there to help. Yeah. So recoveringfromreligion.org.
Yeah. And so I hope all of our listeners have a wonderful holiday season. You as well, Tim.
You too.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Recovering from Religion podcast. If you have questions for either of us or suggestions for future topics, you can email us at podcast@recoveringfromreligion.org. If you think you'd like to be one of our guests, we have a form on the podcast page of the Recovering from Religion website. We'd love to hear from you.